Hello, I'm Angry, and this is Q and Angry, my follow-up podcast to my weekly feature articles. This week, I'm following up on the article that I published last week in Early Access and this week for General Access called Designing on Purpose. It is a part of my True Scenario Designery series, the series that I'm writing about how to write good adventures and campaigns and encounters and things. And this is actually the first episode I'm recording ever of Q and Angry. So I'm going to leave it to you to figure out what this is all about. But essentially, we're just going to follow up the article that I published. I'm going to clarify a few things. I've got some questions that people submitted. I looked through the comments that were left on the early access thing. And then with any time we have left over, we are going to take questions from the studio audience who has gathered here. And meanwhile, to keep me on the clock, I have my producer, Procillus, the dapper hunter, whatever Procillus's title is. Currently, Procillus is still the hungry Metroid. Procillus the hungry Metroid, Angryon, friend of the show and producer. And he will keep me on track. So, of course, Designing on Purpose is the first of three articles that I'm writing about the basic fundamentals of game design that I feel everyone needs to know in order to start designing scenarios. And as such, this one was a little bit of a mushy mess. I was all over the place, but I was mainly trying to address the topic of what I'm calling purpose-driven design. That is, understand what you're trying to design, describe it to yourself, and then build the game that you're going to build. Because, of course, scenario design is game design. And that's what you're doing as a scenario designer. You're designing a game, a complete game, start to finish. I hope that was made clear in the article. One thing that was important in this article is this marks the return of my acknowledging two things, narrative and fantasy, which are the terms I'm going to be using forever after for the story shit and the world-building simulation shit. Previously, I convinced you all that the best philosophy for scenario design is game design über alles. Start with the game design. You're trying to build a game first. Then you make it conform, you provide a good story, and then you make it fit a good world, and you do all that other shit. But game design always comes first. Forget story. Forget simulation. Those are things to just get out of your head. They will not serve you well. Now that I've convinced everyone of that, I went ahead and acknowledged, actually, you don't completely forget about them. They come second. The game design has to come first. And I even acknowledge that most of the time when you are building an adventure or a scenario, a campaign, whatever you're building, you're probably going to start with some sense of story or fantasy or whatever. That's going to be the seed that you start describing your design from. Then you put that crap aside and say, okay, this is what I want to design now. You design you come up with a design intention, you know, what you're actually trying to build. You describe your game. And then you consider, is this gameplay also good story? Is this gameplay also good narrative? And how can I fill all those roles? So that was the important thing, was putting back in the fantasy, which is world simulation, and the narrative, which is story bullshit, putting that back into the design and saying it does have a place there. Okay, and that's all I really wanted to clarify from the article, because I think I got my main points across, and I also know that the next two features in this series, one is on the anatomy of a game, and the other is on the anatomy of a challenge, and that three-part pile will all come together and form sort of a complete fundamental understanding of the very basics of game design, what I'm going to call game architecture, how to put together a game at the very basic level before we start talking about the specifics of tabletop RPG design. But anyway, now I'm going to turn my attention to some questions that people have posed that I gathered in advance in a thread. And the first question I want to address, and I'm going to take a little extra time on this one, is also one that came up in a discussion this very morning that I'm recording this, which turned out to be Thursday and not Wednesday, this very morning on my Discord, because people were fighting about this and totally forgetting about it. And this starts with Athatos, who wanted to ask me about the difference in approach between scenario designers and game masters. And this is an important point. It's one that I thought I had made. It's one that I thought I had made repeatedly, and I can see it's still not actually getting through to people. and it's really important that it does. This is the difference. A game master is not a game designer, okay? A scenario designer is trying to design a good, complete gameplay experience. They get to sit above the design and they get to look down and, you know, from the 30,000 feet sky god view, they can put all the pieces together and say, yes, I am building good gameplay. The game master is basically standing in the middle of the highway as traffic is flying past, just trying to direct the cars. Okay, they have no sense of the bigger picture. They can't. They're in the trenches. The only thing they can do is keep the game moving and to keep the game flowing. Okay, if you're both a scenario designer, as in you write your own adventures, and you're a game master, as in you go to the table then and run the adventure you wrote, you have to accept that those are two different roles, and you should not expect yourself to be the other person when you're not. This is important because as a scenario designer, it's your job to understand that the game designer at any given moment just has traffic flying at him and he needs to know which way to send it and he needs to know it quick. So as a scenario designer, you never want the game master to have to do anything more than snap judgments. If the game master has to invent an entire encounter because the game didn't fill in, you know, because you as a scenario designer, you didn't put an encounter where it needs to be or whatever, then you kind of failed in your role as a scenario designer. Now the game designer is the game master is desperately trying to fix that problem, but they're not the best person to fix it. That's you, the person who gets to sit before the game and look at the whole big picture. Okay? The game master is not equipped for that shit. They're going to do it anyway, and it is going to happen. Okay, and this is where open-endedness comes in, and I'm going to come back to open-endedness in a bit because I'm going to talk about Nicholas's question, but this is where the open-endedness thing becomes kind of an issue because we all know as game masters, shit's going to happen. Players are going to go off in weird directions, and I am going to have to pull encounters out of my ass to keep the game running, okay? And I'm going to just do what I have to do to keep the game running, but I am not going to delude myself into thinking that what I'm doing at the table is game design. What I'm doing at the table is desperately, screamingly just trying to keep the game moving vaguely in the direction that I want it to move, okay? As a scenario designer, one of the things you're trying to do is, number one, predict where the players are going to go by understanding the basics of human behavior, and if you're writing games for specific players, understanding specifically your players so that you know where they're going to go and you're ready for it. And number two, to build things into your design that nudge the players in the direction you want them to go without ever letting them see that's what you're doing, okay? A good scenario designer never has a GM who's in a situation where they need to build whole piles of game content because they have effectively guided the players or predicted the players, and there's already content there for the game master, which also is the way that the scenario designer makes sure they don't have to design too damn much. A good scenario designer never gets in a situation where, oh my gosh, I have designed 17 encounters that never came up at the table. What am I to do with all this extra work? Well, that means that in terms of predicting and guiding your players, you're kind of screwing it up. Of course, in the real world, that's going to happen. Okay, we all know that it is impossible to actually guide and predict players totally 100% effectively. It is the goal, though. Okay, as a scenario designer, your goal is to 100% perfectly guide and predict the player's actions, make sure the exact content that is needed for those actions is right there in front of them before the game master needs it, so that the game master can just fart it out. Ultimately, you only want the game master doing three things: describing the situation the players find themselves in, determining the outcomes of their actions, and describing those outcomes. That is it. Anything else the game master has to do is because the scenario designer failed to carry them. And I hope that now makes the difference clear. And it's not gonna, and we're gonna have this conversation again and again and again and again and again. Okay, now let's go to more questions, because Nicholas wanted to ask a little bit about the perpetual adventure problem that I brought up. And this is a case where The players become sort of stuck in trying things over and over again in an adventure because they don't realize they've hit a dead end. They've hit the adventure has dead ended. The murderer has gotten away. The village has burned down, or the village, or the burning down of the village is imminent, or whatever it is, whatever outcome it is, the players were trying to forestall, or whatever good outcome the players were trying to bring around, it is no longer available. It's just done. It can also happen in smaller ways, such as when the players fail to get through a locked door, and there is now no reasonable way to get through that locked door. They can't think of some clever, creative way to bypass the locked door, and you didn't build in any other ways in your scenario for that door to be opened because you wanted to make it a one-and-done challenge. It's like, you either get through this door or this door is locked off for you to your players forever, which is totally fair. There is nothing wrong with that, okay? The problem is, players do not like to admit defeat, and if you leave it on them to admit and recognize they have been defeated, they never ever will. They will stand there staring at that door saying, anybody have any other ideas? Well, I could try to hack through it with my dagger. I could do them, you know, blah, 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 blah. They will do that until their characters starve and die, okay? They will not move on. That is players, okay? And that is the perpetual adventure problem. Okay, so what Nicholas specifically asked me about is, can I give other examples of scenarios that tend to fall into perpetual adventure problems? And the answer is, all scenarios have the potential to become a perpetual adventure problem because you, as the scenario designer, usually didn't identify what the different outcomes of the scenario you built were in the first place, and didn't find ways to signal it properly to the players or to instruct the game master to tell the players, this has just failed. Okay, this, you know, there's other problems that can lead to it too, but that's the main one, okay? So any adventure can do it, especially if that adventure lacks a clear outcome, and especially if the players have nothing pressing on them, that there is no... So this is another thing, and I'm probably getting into a very advanced topic here, but there is a concept in game design called momentum or inertia. That means from the moment the game starts, it is barreling toward a conclusion, okay? If you do nothing, if you ignore the game, it will come to an end, okay? This is important because it is what keeps the game moving if the players just sit around with their thumbs up their asses doing nothing. So if the players can just sit there and hem and haw at a locked door forever, then there is a failure of inertia. That game is not moving toward a conclusion such that the players feel that they can just do that. And it's not always a matter of like the urgent ticking time bomb thing. Okay, there are lots of ways that it could be inertia. You could have the xenomorph could be running around the dungeon, and at the 0 hour, at T minus zero, whatever it is, that is when the xenomorph emerges and devours the players. Okay, which I guess is technically kind of a ticking time bomb too. But or it's that situation where the game moves on to another phase. Like, at this point, the door is irrelevant because Satan has now escaped the dungeon and is trampling toward the town. Whatever. Okay. Nicholas and Shutmick1 also, they both wanted to know a little bit more about how to fix a problematic scenario. Like, if you have a scenario design that is obviously a problem, how do you fix it? And there are two answers here. And they also wanted some more examples of Una-like mechanics where I fixed a problem in the design. And I'm not going to answer that question because I want to explain why this question already shows that you are not ready for true scenario designery yet. First of all, there is no such thing as a problematic or troublesome scenario. There is no specific class of scenarios that is just problematic or troublesome that can't be executed. And Una was not about fixing a problem in the scenario, okay? A game has needs. Scenario design is about recognizing those needs and building the elements of the game you need to meet those needs. Una was not me fixing a problem in my design. It was me recognizing that if I'm building a mystery adventure, I still need a way for the players to check their answers, as I discussed. And so I built Una into it. That's not because mysteries are problematic or because I had somehow failed to realize that there was no win state. It was, I know what games need, and one of those things is that, and so I put it in. Which is also why it's really hard to just come up with examples on the fly. Because you just sort of kind of do this shit. You know, you get to a point where you're writing an adventure and you're like, oh, you know what? I have no momentum in this thing. There's nothing that is pushing this adventure toward a conclusion one way or the other. You know, I need to do that or whatever. Or there are actually situations where not momentum is okay, but you have to know what you're doing, and then you have to replace it with other things. But again, this is all very advanced stuff, and right now we're still trying to lay the foundation, so I don't want to throw too much crap on here. But don't think in terms of which scenarios are a problem, and, you know, how can I use the magic of game design to fix the problems in the scenarios I want to run, because that's not what you're doing. What you're doing is choosing the scenario you want to run, now analyzing it from a gameplay standpoint and saying, what do I need to make this scenario a game, a proper game, and then doing that. That's game design. It's not fixing problems. Shot McOne also wanted to know how you could adapt the approach of good scenario design to games that were more focused on collaborative storytelling and improvisation. Okay, first things first. Collaborative storytelling is not gameplay. Okay, if you are playing a collaborative storytelling experience, you are not playing a game. The rules of game design do not apply. And if you say, well, this game is more focused on collaborative storytelling, that is a nonsense phrase. Good games do have emergent stories, okay? Breath of the Wild is excellent for its emergent storytelling potential. So are, we were talking recently about immersive sims, like games like Dishonored and Prey and like Deus Ex and System Shock, which are all excellent for their emergent storytelling. So is something like Shadow of Mordor and to a lesser extent Shadow of War. These were things where stories would emerge as you were playing the game in response to your actions. Emergent storytelling is not the same as collaborative storytelling. Okay, emergent gameplay is, I have chosen to make a game that has a focus on emergent storytelling, and now how can I design the game so that that will be the focus? Okay, but we're not going to talk about collaborative storytelling. And for the same reason, improvisation is a tricky beast. Okay, but further, because of that shit I said about scenario design and the game master, okay, the thing is, first of all, if you're relying on improvisation to design your game, what you're really doing is saying, I'm going to force the person in the worst place to do the game design to do the actual game design. Because once again, no matter what, the game master is basically a deer in the middle of the highway. Just has traffic flying at him and he's just trying to get off the highway. That is what running a game is like. You are like a deer on an interstate highway with traffic just flying at you and you're trying to get out of it alive. Okay, you should not also be trying to design a game. I know there are some people who are like, oh, I love to rely on improvisation. It's so much. You know what? Fine, good, but you're a shit game designer and you're never going to be good because that is the worst way to design a game. That said, improvisation does not preclude scenario design. If you give the game master the proper tools so that they can improvise things, and you also recognize the places where improvisation is strong, then you're now working with the game master as your partner. Okay, for example, improvisation is great in social interactions. There's no way to pre-write a social interaction, not without doing some bullshit like a dialogue tree. Dialogue trees are video game patch and fix nonsense that real game masters should not go anywhere near. Okay, same with like AI for monsters. Monsters should never, there should never be a codified AI thing like if the monster is in this state, it does this, monster does this, which I know, what's his name? Colville. Colville loves his AI monster design, or was it Runehammer? It was one of them. Had this big thing about AI monster design. It's like, just write an AI for your monster. And it's like, no, don't do that, because monsters behaving in realistic ways and adapting to situations and behaving like living things, that's a great use of improvisation. That's where the GM can really shine, thinking on their feet and adapting to the situation, provided the scenario designer gives them the tools. Like, what is this monster's motivation? What are this monster's abilities? And if the monster has some weird ability, or there's some weird element of the battleground that the monster can use, that the scenario designer gives the mechanics to the game master, so the game master doesn't also have to figure out the mechanical rules for what the monster is doing. You know, figure out what that monster's going to do. If the monster's going to do some creative weird trick with the battlefield, figure it out in advance and tell the game master how to handle it, and tell the game master how to telegraph it. Okay, same with conversations. Give the game master things like motivations and hopes and fears and dreams and, you know, triggers that will offend the NPC and stuff like that. Then let the NPC improvise. Don't ask the game master to improvise entire encounters or build an entire map from nothing. If there is a point of interest in the town, the players are going to go in there. If it's going to need a map, be ready with a map already, okay? Stuff like that. So improvisation does not preclude scenario design. But scenario design can preclude improvisation, because once again, a predictive and guiding scenario designer can prevent the GM from having to fall too far back on game design. Okay, Mac Chaos wanted to ask, or Mac Chaos asked, do I share my design intent with my players? Because I talked about writing out a statement of design intentions, right? The spell out, what is the game you're actually trying to design? I'm trying to design a stealth-based adventure where the players will have to sneak into an enemy base and recover the secret plans without triggering the alarm. If they trigger the alarm, they will have to fight their way out. But then the enemy will realize that their plans have been compromised, and they will have different plans, so any information they gathered will be useless. Or if the players get out successfully, they can deliver the plans, and then that will lead on to the next adventure in the war, right? Simple design statement. Do I share that with the players? Absolutely friggin' not. The players do not need to know the design process. The players need to play the game I put in front of them. And that's it. And they don't need to know why I made the game work the way it did. And they don't need to know how I did it and what clever tricks I'm pulling off. And in fact, because of how much of scenario design is inherently deceptive, because a lot of it is, you know, some of it is predicting the player's actions, but if you can push the players to take the right actions and they never notice what you're doing, that's better than predicting. It's much more likely to work, okay? But anyway, so I do not share my design intentions, and neither should you. As a game master, you show up, you run the game you've written, and then you move on, right? And that's it. That's the end of it. That's all the players need to know. Okay, it's not, you know, playing Pandemic, the board game, not real life. Playing Pandemic is not improved by watching a 10-minute video first about how the designers designed Pandemic, or why they picked the roles they did, or shit like that. Some people eat that stuff up, and they can enjoy it on their own time. That said, I am also a liar, because I do sometimes share design intents with my players. But it's for a very specific reason, okay? I am the angry GM. I publish advice and how to write good games and run good games and all that shit. Thankfully, I don't publish things on how to talk good extemporaneously, because I keep failing at that. But I do actually teach people how to write and run games, which means that at least some of my players who sit down at my table, they know who I am, and some of them are hoping to get something out of my games. I'm hoping that my long-term players now, especially the ones in my AD&D group, have figured out you're not getting anything out of me because I run a really shit game compared to how I tell people to run and write games. Like, the actual games I run are garbage, but I'm really good at telling other people how to write and run good games. So they've kind of given up hope that they're going to get anything useful out of me from my table play. But occasionally people will ask me, it's like, you know, why did you do this? Or how did you do that? You know, and I will answer them. You know, I will try to avoid spoilers because I don't want to ruin the game. But if anybody really does want to know how the sausage is made, I will answer them. But that's fairly unique to my situation. And I include it only for completeness. If I was not in that situation, if I was just running for some random schlubs, and during the game, one of them wanted to say, hey, why did you put this encounter here? What was the point? I'll say, hey, if you want to talk about this after the game, grab me after the game and I'll chat for a bit, you know, while I, you know, but beyond that, no, I'm not going to do that, you know. Okay. And finally, the last question, I should have just enough time to do this because I am managing my time super well and my script. French Rice Merman asked me, do I really throw away adventures that don't work? That's not quite what he asked. He wanted examples of all the adventures I've ever thrown away because they just don't work. But again, and I'm going to explain why I can't give an answer, but yes, I've thrown away lots of adventures. I've thrown away adventures. I've thrown away encounters. I've thrown away maps. I've thrown away all sorts of shit. I've also thrown away many, many, many articles on my website that you will never, ever see because they were crap. And I looked at them and said, you know, this is garbage. I can't publish this. I do it all the time. I do it so often that I just don't, I can't come up with any examples on the fly. Okay, sometimes a thing can be salvaged. Sometimes you look at it and you're like, okay, this has some serious problems, but I really like this idea and I'm attached to it. So I'm going to go ahead, rewrite this. I'm going to need this. I'm going to need that. I'm going to need whatever. But other times, honestly, it's not worth it. Other times it's usually just, you look at it, you're like, this is going to be a disaster. And you get to a certain point where you've done it, where you write enough adventures or homebrews or whatever, that you look at it and you say, you know what, this is gonna be crap. The more interesting question that nobody asked and I now don't have time to answer is the question of how many adventures do I run that I realize I should have thrown this away and restarted because this is shit? And the answer is more than I want to admit. But that's it for the questions, and I don't have any time to take any more questions, and I feel bad because my super awesome stopwatch and scripting ability and timing ability is basically making Proselus' job super easy today. But nonetheless, that's all I got for today, and that's all for the first episode of Q and Angry. And I will be around. I want to do one of these after every one of my articles, but in reality, some of my articles just don't lend them to it or don't lend themselves to it. And this is where the whole thing falls down. I had a beautiful script. I was ready to do this all, and I didn't figure out what the outro was going to be. So now I just have to stop myself from babbling incessantly and just say, those were your questions. I gave you your answers, and I'm done.